Thank you, Niraj. So first of all, let me say that I'm excited to be here and talking in front of the FAST community. I'm Hakeem Weatherspoon, and I'm a faculty member at Cornell University. I, too, don't need a job this year. Thank goodness I found it last year. So I'm here to present Smoke and Mirrors, Shadowing Files at a Geographically Remote Location Without Loss of Performance. And this is joint work with Lakshmi Ganesh, Tudor Marion, Mahesh Balakrishna, and Ken Berman. So first of all, to motivate this, if you guys are anything like me, then over the last year, you've lost up to 40% on your stock portfolio. This is fairly common, given that the stock market itself has lost 50% over the last 18 months. Now, what does this have to do with what I have up here on the slide? If you can imagine for a second, if we had another disaster or 9/11 type of attack on our financial sector, what would happen to the world then? Does it just end at that point? The U.S. Treasury, the U.S. Department of Treasury has noticed this, and they actually commissioned a study in 2005 where they then set forth the research agenda to look for new technical option that would help ameliorate this vulnerability. And it seems reasonable given that we have very advanced data centers and networking. We heard on Tuesday from Alyssa from Amazon, the very sophisticated data centers that they have. And so one question might be is, why is this problem not already solved? Why is our critical data still vulnerable? And the answer is actually rooted in a very old problem, which is the speed of light. So you could blame Einstein for this problem. And that, the problem, if you were to look at it, is exactly the difference between asynchronous and synchronous mirroring. So in this example, we have a client that we have a primary backup situation. We have a client that is communicating with the primary site. When the primary site receives the update, it is then going to commit the update locally to non-volatile storage and then respond to the client immediately. And the advantages of this are that it's very fast. You get fairly local performance, at least for the primary site, and then the client receives a response immediately. And sometime later, the primary site will send an update to the backup. The bad part about this is if you lose that primary site before the update makes it to the backup, then you will have lost any recently written data. And some studies show that up to 40% of businesses, small businesses, go out of business when they suffer a major data loss within 3 to 5 years. At the other end of the spectrum is a synchronous mirroring solution. And here, after a primary site receives an update, it immediately sends it to a remote mirror. The remote mirror then applies it to its non-volatile storage and responds. Only after receiving the response does the primary site then respond to the client. And the nice properties of this synchronous mirroring solution are that it's very safe. If anything happens to your primary site, the data still exists at the remote mirror. The problem with it, of course, is performance. The performance is dependent on the distance from the remote mirror to the primary site. For this reason, then, our financial sector often has a synchronous backup just across the river in New Jersey while the primary site's in Manhattan Island. If you wanted to move it further away, many businesses would fail for other reasons of non-competitiveness. So then the problem then is that there's no middle ground. You have to either choose an asynchronous update or a synchronous one. So either the potential loss of data or the potential loss of performance. And as it turns out, most enterprises, even banks, often choose an asynchronous backup. And the reason is that for many, many applications, you would just lose out anyways if the performance was so bad. So many companies and enterprises are betting on that a disaster will not strike, and they're betting on performance. So for the rest of this talk, I'm going to actually refer to the asynchronous case as a local sync, and the synchronous case as a remote sync. And so then to restate that, most enterprises then use a local sync remote mirroring option for a local sync mirroring option for their applications, even their critical applications. So then the question then becomes, if most enterprises are using local sync anyways, how can we actually increase the reliability of our local sync mirroring option, if at all we can? And right now there exists a spectrum of local sync mirroring options. One is called semi-synchronous mirroring, where immediately you'll send the update to the remote mirror, but you won't wait for the response. You'll commit it to local non-volatile storage, respond to the client, send it to the remote mirror. At the other end of that spectrum, you can delay it some amount of time. And the reason that you would delay it is that allows for some of the deduplication that we've heard about. You can reduce or eliminate redundant updates, and you can reduce then the wide area bandwidth consumption. So for this talk, I'm actually going to focus mostly on the semi-synchronous updates, where you're going to send it immediately. So then looking for the rest of the talk, for an enterprise continuity solution where we want the enterprise to continue to operate even if there is a disaster, is there any way that we can construct a better solution? So in order to look at that, we're going to see, where does data loss actually occur? Can we actually prevent the data loss? And if so, how do we actually construct such a solution? So first of all, where does data loss actually occur? Data loss can occur if you lose the primary site and at the same time you suffer some type of packet loss, there is a network partition, or for some reason your update does not make it to the other site, such as you lose power at the same time and your disk controller then turns off. But the key here is, if you're using a local sync and sending it immediately, you need some type of joint failure. Some other things to know is that if you're using some type of reliable streaming protocol, such as TCP, then if you did suffer a packet loss, not only would you lose that update, but you would lose any subsequent one as well, because TCP would not be able to deliver any subsequent packets to the application. And finally, the thing to note about this are any packets that are buffered in local kernels or stored in local queues before they make it out of the wide area could actually be lost as well with that primary site. So the intuition on how we're actually going to increase the reliability of a local sync mirroring protocol is to realize that the network that's connecting these data centers are often dedicated fiber, high-quality fiber. They have very low bit error rates, something like 1 out of 10 to the negative 12 bits, 1 out of 10 to 12 bits. Or if you convert that to packets, 1 out of 10 to the 10 to the 8th, 1 kilobyte packets. If you were to do something simple, such as just send every packet twice, then you, and assuming independent failures, then you can drive that failure rate down to something like 1 out of 10 to the 16th. That starts to look like a disk. The probability that a disk sector does not return back information that's stored on it is something like 1 out of 10 to the 15th. So if it starts to look like a disk, why not treat it like one? And this is then the intuition. So we're then going to construct some network sync abstraction where, as soon as packets are on the wide area network, we're then going to call it safe, it's been sunk to disk, and we're going to be able to move on to the next operation. So we're going to need two things in order to do that. Number one, some type of redundancy on that link, and number two, to know that redundancy is on the link. Now looking towards the solution, if you look here at both the primary site and the remote site, the boxes around it, at the edge there is a gateway or router, essentially just a router. We're going to use that router to go ahead and forward packets on as normal, like any other router would do, and at the same time send along some type of repair packets or forward error correction codes. And so we have here, as example, we have a host that's sending some number of packets to the remote mirror, and the gateway forwards it along like it normally does. And at the same time, it's going to use some type of forward error correction scheme and send some type of error recovery packet. Now, if a packet is lost, the remote mirror, the gateway at the remote mirror, has some opportunity to recover that lost packet. The other thing that this gateway is going to do is it's going to send some type of network level acknowledgement to the host at the primary site, such that when that host receives that network level acknowledgement, it could then move on to any dependent operation. Now going along with the example, if you did actually lose a packet, you could then actually recover that at the remote site. When the remote site receives the acknowledgement or receives the update, it can then send acknowledgement back to the primary site. And the thing to note about here, this picture here, is the difference in time between the network level acknowledgement in red and the storage level acknowledgement in blue. One is on the order of microseconds, the other one's on the order of tens to hundreds of milliseconds, depending on how far away your remote site is. So now we have opportunity to move to any dependent operation much faster. Another thing is that if you actually did lose a primary site, there is much higher chance that you could actually receive all the updates at the remote mirror because of the redundancy on the wide area link. And a common question is, in terms of TCP, can't you just resend? But the thing to note here is that if your primary site is gone, there is then no opportunity to reactively resend any lost packets. So to summarize and emphasize 3 points, we then are going to take a local sync protocol. We're going to call it network sync. We're going to increase the reliability of that that local sync operation by reducing some of the failure modes, which is we're going to reduce the probability that we lose packets on a wide area network. We're also going to, by setting a network level acknowledgement, we're going to reduce or eliminate the chance that we're going to lose packets that are buffered at local kernels or within local networking queues. Now, I need to qualify this a little bit and say that you still can lose data. So a network sync solution is not as safe as a synchronous or remote sync solution. We're not waiting for an acknowledgement from the remote guy. It is still possible that at the same time you lose your primary site, a truck runs into the network, or you know, someone uses their backhoe and pulls up the fiber, and everything falls over at the same time. That's still possible, so it's not as safe as that. However, again, it does reduce some of the failure modes that local sync suffered from. Another point about the network sync solution is that you can have multiple mirroring solution work on top of that at different levels, at the controller level or storage area network level or file system level, depending on where you're actually doing the mirroring from. And I'll talk about one style of mirroring in particular at a file system called the Smoke and Mirrors file system. And the reason it's called Smoke and Mirrors is because it's using a network sync solution, and we're somehow skirting the speed of light issue, although not really. We're just kind of hiding it from you. And the way that this file system is going to work is it's same as any other file system tree structure, except that we're going to append operations like a log structured file system. And each append then is going to contain blocks in a depth-first manner. And we're then going to mirror these appends from the primary site to the mirror site. And another feature about this file system is each append is going to be applied atomically. So all the operations contained within a single append will either be applied either all or not at the remote mirror. And so here's a picture of that. So finally, moving on to the evaluation, we then implemented all of this. We have a commodity Linux Intel box kernel or a commodity box where we implemented as a kernel module the network sync solution. And it's going to keep track of the TCP stream. And once it injects recovery packets on a wide area link, it's going to send via UDP channel an acknowledgement back to the host app. And it's going to say, I've sent recovery packets up to byte stream X, where X may be 5,000 or 5 million, wherever the byte stream is. We're going to use Emulab with a 1 gigabit link connecting the primary and remote site. And we're going to vary the latency from 25 to 100 milliseconds and use up to 8 storage nodes with up to 64 testers, where each tester within a closed loop going to send 1/2 megabyte append at a time. And it, when it receives the acknowledgement, it's then going to move on to any subsequent operation. And that acknowledgement then is received at different times depending on whether it's a network sync, a remote sync, or a local sync, which there is no acknowledgement. So now to construct a disaster scenario, what we're going to get out of this first graph is how much data is lost in a disaster. So here we're going to actually fail the primary site, but half a second before we do that, we're going to induce some type of loss on a wide area link. So the x-axis then varies that loss on a wide area link. It's going to be random and uniformly distributed. So it's going to be from 0 to 1%, which is fairly significant loss. Also, the characteristics of the network is the latency is going to be 50 millisecond one way or 100 millisecond round trip. The forward error correction parameters that we're going to use are for every 8 data packets, we're going to send 3 repair packets, and it's actually going to be interleaved using a layered interleaving forward direction correction code that's talked about in a different paper in NSDI. And finally, we're not going to use a remote sync mirroring protocol because that shouldn't lose any data. It's going to wait for acknowledgement. So here we're only going to show in red the local sync. In light blue or turquoise is the network sync. And in the middle, the dark blue, is a variant. It's going to be a local sync plus FEC. And remember, local sync is not going to wait for any acknowledgement at all. And the height of this graph, the y-axis, then shows the total number of messages sent during this experiment. And then the white bars at the bottom then shows how many messages were lost. So we see here that with no loss on the wide area link for this first set of bars, that there was some loss for the local sync and local sync plus FEC case. And the reason is that because it didn't wait for any type of acknowledgement at all, there was actual loss for anything that was stored within the local kernel buffers or local networking queues. But there was nothing lost within the network sync since we were waiting for acknowledgement. As we increase the loss on a wide area link, then we see significant amount of loss for the local sync case, the red line, the red bar. And that's because, again, if you lost, there was no protection from any loss on a wide area link. So any packet that was lost, that message associated message was lost as well. Plus, any subsequent messages would be lost since they couldn't be delivered to the application. But the middle dark blue line, the local sync plus FEC case, again, only lost data due to local kernel buffers and network queues. And finally, the turquoise or light blue line, in this experiment, didn't lose any data. In a paper, we have a subsequent experiment where we vary the amount of forward error correction codes from 0 up to 3. And in those cases where you don't have enough redundancy to mask loss, then even network sync loses data as well. But I'm not going to go over that right now. Another experimenter question that you might have is, can we actually get performance independent of link latency? And so that's the whole advantage of having an asynchronous solution, is that you can have performance independent of link latency. However, with the network sync solution, we can actually have it not only independent of latency, but also can mask loss. So here is all network sync solutions. The bars show various amounts of loss from 0% up to 1%, and the performance is just about the same for all of them, anywhere from 25 up to 100 milliseconds. And I have the corresponding latencies at the bottom there, New York to Chicago, San Francisco, Anchorage, or Japan. All of that's the one-way latency. Another question is, what about the performance of a single application? With the local sync case, you can move to any subsequent operation as soon as send returns. With the network sync, you have to wait until you receive some type of response from your local gateway. So here we have, in the red and black are actually our local sync and local sync plus FET cases. And the turquoise, again, is the network sync. So we see here that the performance of the network sync is actually similar to the local sync plus cases, the local sync and local sync plus FEC. And as we increase the loss on the wide area link, the performance is actually similar to the local sync plus FEC. And the final set of experiments are, what are the trade-offs for using a network sync solution? There is some type of cost. You can't have everything for free. And so the cost here is that we are actually adding some extra packets on the wide area link that the application cannot use. So we're actually reducing the good put on our wide area link. And you can see that here between the black and the gray lines are the protocols that don't use any forward error correction at all. And the color lines are protocols that do. And so the difference, for example, in that very first set of bars, the difference in the height there are due to the overhead of the parameters that we're using. So in a couple minutes remaining, I just want to go into some future work that we are working on, which are the experiments that I just showed you were all based on Emulab. And part of the motivation of this work was that looking at the TerraGrid data, there is actually some significant amount of loss that you can look at when you look into their monitoring data. Using 0.1 up to 1% loss is a significant astronomical amount of loss. And most people think, no, you would never see that amount of loss in a $100 million plus Lambda network. And even though TerraGrid monitoring data cites that, there must be something wrong. This is a lot of the responses that we get. And so then we constructed our own test bed, since Cornell has a point of presence in the National Lambda Rail, where both ends of the link are there within Cornell, and we're able to send packets around the wide area, either from, we have three rings, we have to New York City and back. We have another ring that goes from Ithaca out to Chicago, down to Atlanta and back. And then we have another ring that goes out to Seattle, down to LA and back. So these are our own personal Lambda networks. They're very uncongested. They have various latencies from 15 to 74 to 188 round-trip latencies. And we're able to then test to see if there's actual any loss and actually rerun some of these experiments. And actually, last thing I'll say about this is you can actually see that it's uncongested. The dark colors show that it's not being run. And the yellow is actually us running on the network. So you can see us running on this medium path and on this long path. And what we've noticed is something interesting, is that 31 out of those 32 segments are DWDM, dense wave division multiplex. You have your own wavelength of light. And one of them, that yellow one, was actually a sonnet. And so we actually noticed at times significant amount of loss, up to 0.5% loss, that was actually reproducible. We don't know exactly why, but we think it's the conversion as you're going from one network technology to another. And so we're actually able to, in this situation, replicate some amount of significant loss in a very expensive network. And some other work that we're doing then is actually using commodity components to actually drive this thing at 10 gigabit per second and beyond. So with that, I want to go ahead and conclude. I just want to say that there was a call for some type of technology response for our critical infrastructure. We believe that the network sync and smoke and mirrors file system is a response to that, maybe not a perfect one, but it does address some of the issues at heart. And we believe that would be a great option for a lot of industry to adopt. And with that, I'll conclude. I have my email up here. The code that we use for the network sync is available. And also, we hope to make access to our Cornell National Lambda Rail test bed available as well. So thank you.
Hello, my name is Ellard Rausch, and I work for Sun Microsystems, and I work on high availability clusters. I find the idea interesting, but there's a couple things I'm not sure if you skipped over them, but I'll raise them, and I think could strengthen your argument. Is that, first off, it seemed like the assumption was made that failures were independent on the network, and you could have things like a router can take, and it's going to take out all the packets. And so basically, I think the one thing that would add to this particular idea is the notion that the ACK from the networking doesn't come back until after the packets are shipped. That wasn't quite clear whether that's what you're doing or not. And the second point is the packets have to go across independent paths. And that's what we do in our high availability clusters. And then I could see how this would then be higher availability than the asynchronous mode, not quite perfect, as you admit, as the fully synchronous mode.
Yeah, so first of all, I didn't go into the forward error correction scheme that we used. That was actually talked about in a different paper called Maelstrom and NSDI 2008. But that actually does consider bursty loss. And so the advantage of using that forward error correction scheme is even though you have a constant overhead, 3 redundant packets for every 8, the recovery time is actually proportional to the amount of loss. And so for that one, we actually can mask massive amounts of correlated loss. For the second point that you had, which was when do we actually send the acknowledgement back to the client, we actually send it back after the router that we control has forwarded the recovery packets on.
Thank you.
Actually, I just sat down again. I was about to ask that very same question as someone who's I was in streaming media. I'm Steven Spackman. I'm from Quantum once again, still. But previously, I was in streaming media, and I had Lambda Grid access. And yes, the assumption of independence of packet failure is just wildly false if you're running over a single link. You only buy yourself 10 to the second, not 10 to the eighth by doing that. But I realized I did want to say one other thing, which is thank you so much for standing up to the tyranny of TCP. This is a lesson that people have to learn. TCP will not solve your problems because it's not reliable. It's wait forever, and that's never good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm David Rosenthal from Stanford, and I just want to recommend to everyone that monitoring the loss rate on your links is really a good idea. In an earlier life, we had this company called Vitria. Deutsche Bank were building a bond trading system on top of our message infrastructure. And of course, you can't see a bond trading network. It has such valuable data on it. So you have to debug the software without being able to see the environment that's producing the bugs. And it was several weeks before we asked them the key question. It's like, okay, tell us the packet loss rate on these links.
Right.
And in some cases, it was up to 7%. They were paying huge amounts of money for SLAs guaranteeing loss rates, and they weren't monitoring whether they were actually getting what they were paying for. And so any time you get into network performance things, measure the loss rate.
Right. Well, yeah, that's an excellent point. So these people in TerraGrid and National Lambda Rail, whatnot, they are monitoring the networks, but still the scientific community and the end users, they still don't know exactly why they're not getting the performance that they paid for. Okay. Thank you.